Once upon a time, in an age of forests and firelights, our ancestors were wise to the spectrum of human identity. Among the fairy tales and myths they told were stories of glass coffins and marble statues, eunuchs and androgynes, chaste marriages and bodily transformations, symbolic stories that hint at other identities, tales of asexuality. This is the Asexual Fairy Tales Podcast, and I'm your storyteller, Elizabeth Hopkinson. Each month, I'll be reading you another story from my books of asexual fairy tales. Some of these are old tales of myth and legend, in which I first found representation for my asexual identity. Others are original stories by me, based on traditional motifs. It's a personal selection, but I hope you find something in it that speaks to you too. So, sit back, if you are able, relax, and enjoy another asexual fairy tale. Hello, and welcome to a new season of Asexual Fairy Tales with me, Elizabeth Hopkinson. Thank you to all those who've stuck with the podcast listening to me, and thank you to those who are listening for the first time as well. I would like to tell you that there is available now a brand new asexual fairy tale that doesn't appear in any of the books that is available to people who donate to my Ko-fi page. If you go to ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson48513, that's ElizabethHopkinson48513, you'll find a story there called Wizard Charming's Cape, and all you have to do is donate any amount of money to my Ko-fi page and you will be able to read that exclusive asexual fairy tale. I'll remind you of that again at the end. This story is called The Little Mermaid Speaks. Hans Christian Andersen's sexuality has been debated at length over the years. Some people think that he was asexual and biromantic. The Little Mermaid first appeared in English in a book called Stories for the Household in 1889, and it's a classic story of unrequited love. On rereading The Little Mermaid when I was writing this collection, I was struck by the asexual symbolism to be found in it. The love of the Little Mermaid for the statue is reminiscent of the tale of Pygmalion, which you can listen to in an earlier episode of this podcast, and the pain she feels when her tail is split into two legs, for me, speaks for itself. In my retelling that I'm going to read to you, I fused Andersen's story with the classic Greek myth of Echo and Narcissus, which is another tale of unrequited, bodiless love and the loss of voice. There are no books under the sea. All our stories are spoken ones, tales told from grandmother to granddaughter, from sister to sister. Tales of the mysterious world above, with its gold and purple sky, its black ships and diamond icebergs, its scented flowers and flying birds. Tales with no beginning and no ending, like the sea itself. In the palace of the king above there are many books. The prince read me a tale from one of them about a man who fell in love with a marble statue and wished that it might come to life. How does he know? I thought as he read. This is my own story that he's telling back to me. And yet, it was not my story. When the statue in the tale came to life, it fell in love with the man and married him. The living person the statue became was just as the man had imagined. When my statue became a real person, nothing was as I imagined. And I have no story to tell because I cannot speak. I had a statue once in my garden beneath the sea. I planted a weeping willow beside it, pink branches reaching down to kiss the blue sand. And I kissed my statue many times, there in my garden as round as the sun. When I saw the prince on the deck of his ship, 16 years old, with deep black eyes. I thought my statue lived and breathed. When the storm broke his ship apart, I took him in my arms. I could have carried him down to the depths then to be with me forever, but not as a living man. He would have been as dead and still as a second statue. And what is a statue compared with a living soul? So, I laid him on the beach. I kissed his pale forehead and smoothed back his hair. And I hid behind the rocks when the maiden came walking from the convent garden and found the prince upon the sand. I watched while he smiled on her and not on me. I watched until the sea foam dried my face, until the sun scorched my hair. Beneath the sea once more I clung to my statue, but what had once brought me joy now brought only sorrow. The willow withered and the flowers ran to choking vines. I wanted my prince. I wanted him so hard, just to be near him, to have the right to love him, for him to smile at me with those deep black eyes. So I sold my voice to the sea witch and went above, and I thought the prince would see me and give me his soul, as I had given him my heart. But it was not like that. It was nothing like I had imagined when I kissed my statue beneath the sea. Needles and knives. Every step I took was needles and knives. When the prince looked at me, he did not see a twin soul. He saw a dear good child, a girl whom he dressed as a page boy to follow him on horseback across the kingdom. Why does he not see a woman? I could not understand. The sea witch had promised me that my beautiful form, my graceful walk and speaking eyes were enough to captivate a human heart. Day after day I spoke to the prince with mournful eyes. I danced as light as a soap bubble, more gracefully than any slave girl, and yet the prince only saw his dear little foundling. What did the slave girls know that I did not? What made their dance any different, free from needles and knives? I could have been content with that life. Had I no need for the prince to give his soul, things might have stayed that way. Every night I slept on a velvet cushion at the threshold to his chamber. Everywhere he travelled, he took me with him. "You are the dearest of all to me," he would say, "for you are the most devoted and have the best heart." And he would kiss my forehead as I had once kissed his. Could this not be enough? Just to be near him, to have the right to love him, for him to smile at me with those deep black eyes. But the sea witch had said we must become man and wife, one in body and in soul. Would that too feel like needles and knives? And then he found her. The princess who had been raised in a convent, she of the dark blue eyes so like to mine, the one he believed had saved him. "You will rejoice at my happiness, I know," he said to me, "for you are the most devoted to me of them all. You feel my joy." I did indeed feel his joy, and in it my own sorrow. I knew I must die for him. Oh, I would have died for him anyway. Had he told me to jump off a cliff, I would have jumped, buried myself, and paid for the funeral. But this was final. This was the sea witch's price for not keeping to the letter of the bargain. Tonight, the prince took his new bride on board ship. Coloured lanterns were lit, and the sailors danced to merry tunes. And I danced, lighter and faster than ever before, whirling around and around on feet that trod upon needles and knives. Past midnight, when the endless sky burned with stars, the prince kissed his beautiful bride long and hard. She ran her hands through his raven hair, head thrown back. He carried her into the silken tent the sailors had erected, laying his bride upon cushions of gold and purple. "My sisters have given me a knife with which to kill the prince. They bought it from the sea witch at the cost of their own hair. but as I draw aside the purple curtain and see the tangled limbs upon the velvet cushions, I know that I could never aspire to such a coupling as this. It is not in my nature. I was born with a tail, not two forked legs that feel to me like needles and knives. It is not the prince's fault. I just wanted to be near him. The night before we docked here, the prince read me another story from his book. It told of a youth, Narcissus, who found his twin soul in the water. But the twin was merely his own reflection, and he wasted away for love of what he could not have. And all the while he was watched by a maiden, Echo, whose curse was that she could not speak of her own accord, only repeat the last words spoken by others. And she wasted away for love of Narcissus, her bones hardening until she became a stone statue, which finally crumbled away, leaving nothing but an echo in the caverns. I am both Narcissus and Echo. The prince, both my Echo and my Narcissus. Tonight I undergo my own metamorphosis, from maid to sea foam, from foam to cloud, from cloud to who knows what. The prince will look into the water in vain, seeking the devoted page, the dear good child, the mermaid who could have been his twin soul. The prince will return to his silken tent and his princess bride, but I will fly as vapour in the air, seeking out other dear good children of this world. May they not be silent as I was. May they have a voice, a story. Thank you for listening, and I'll remind you again of that exclusive asexual fairy tale, Wizard Charming's Cape, if you go to ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson 48513, that's Elizabeth Hopkinson 48513, and donate any amount at all, you can read that very special asexual fairy tale. Thank you for listening to Asexual Fairy Tales. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to the podcast. If you really enjoyed it and want to buy me a coffee, you can do that at ko-fi.com/ElizabethHopkinson 48513. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at @hidden_grove, or go to my website, elizabethhopkinson.uk, where you'll find links to all my books. All the links are in the episode description. I really appreciate all your support. Stay safe and keep reading.